From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Given the aggressive nature of the Trump presidency and the flurry of executive orders and headline-grabbing actions, it's no wonder that our federal courts are also smack dab in the middle of the news cycle. For in our system of government, the check of the judiciary must be ever-present in our democracy. Today on the show, you'll hear from the top federal judge in our region and hear how he sees both his role and the role of the court to often act as the brakes in the vehicle that is the U.S. government. Then, in the second part of the show, you'll hear from the Eugene Library about the upcoming levy that is essential to its operation in these challenging economic times. That's next on Oregon on the Record. The Honorable Mustafa Kazubai, U.S. District Court Judge for the District of Oregon, is relatively new to the bench, but has already made significant rulings, including one just this week barring federal immigration officers from making warrantless arrests. And while he couldn't talk about that case specifically, he joins me in studio to talk about the critical role of the federal judiciary in America today. The Honorable Mustafa Kazubai, U.S. District Court Judge for the District of Oregon, it's great to see you again. Thanks so much for coming in.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, you know, this is, I have just a lot of theoretical questions about the federal judiciary. And like, for example, you know, you have tremendous power to adjudicate the law, but like other judges, you don't control armies. You don't have your own police force. You know, talk about the power that you have as a judge and how that relies on the consent of the governed and those you rule with regard to?
That's a pretty deep deep question, and we can talk about that for quite a while.
Okay.
But you know, turning to the Constitution and its creation of the three branches of government, mm-hmm. one of which is the judiciary, which is described in Article 3.
Okay.
And so we are three co-equal branches, mm-hmm. and whether the founders imagine the genius in advance or the genius became evident in time, the checks and balances that we have in our Constitution provide an incredible amount of resilience.
Mm. I mean,
and to me, that's what makes our democracy thrive, survive, and flow with sometimes the crises that we might find ourselves, whether nationally or globally. And I like to think of the court as a sort of a regulation or a regulator in the context
okay.
of a piece of machinery.
Okay.
It in and of itself isn't what drives the economy or drives policy
mm-hmm.
or determines what has to happen next.
Okay.
But is that which allows the other branches of government to function in an incredibly meaningful way forward.
Okay.
Mind if I use an analogy?
Please.
I like to think of just the raw power of government. Think of it as fuel.
Okay.
In the absence of anything that you could do with the fuel, you light a match to it, it explodes.
Yeah.
Think of our Constitution as the structure, the design, the machinery, the engine. Now, you can take that fuel, you bring it through an engine, it takes that raw power and creates motion.
Yeah.
The courts, in many ways, might be a transmission. It could be the brakes.
Oh, okay.
Really, the ability to drive forward with great speed and mass, which is, I think, the power of our executive branch and that of our Congress, is balanced with sometimes the need to slow down and
okay.
to stop.
Okay. And sometimes, a judge in your position, sometimes you're telling very powerful people, including the president, to stop or go. What's that like? I mean, it must be obviously, I can imagine, as we've all seen, you know, justice is supposed to be blind and the blindfolds in the imagery and whatnot. But obviously, you know, there are very powerful people that want to do things. And someone such as yourself sometimes has to stop and say, no, you can't do that.
We've had a very long tradition in our country of respecting each respective sort of boundary of the branches of government.
Mm-hmm.
And that has flown all the way back to Marbury versus Mandison.
Yeah.
And the recognition of the court's ability to engage in judicial review.
Mm-hmm.
There are thoughts and concerns about how far that goes in the absence of the ability to enforce one's decision with power behind it. But I'd like to think of what the court brings to the table is not the ability of muscle over mass,
okay,
but the idea of compelling logic that can move people to cooperate and collaborate and comply with the law. Our currency are the words that we use.
Hmm.
In the absence of thoughtful words, measured consideration, and robust judicial review, then our currency diminishes. And so part of, I think, what the court brings to the table is this idea that if there is any power in the court, it is through the exercise of restraint.
Hmm. Okay. Is what's happening today, sort of the tension at the federal level from the executive branch, is it still actually pretty normal? We're just paying more attention to it? Or do you find that there are some irregularities happening right now?
I think as a nation, we are paying attention to things because there seems to be a lot more energy coming behind the policy decisions that are appropriately within the realm of the executive branch. Maybe I'd offer it this way, and I think there was a point that you made about the kind of the back and forth and the tension.
Yeah,
I mean, there is a natural need for maybe not so much tension as much as the checks and balances that we so often use
sure.
to describe the roles that we play. But I'd offer it this way: it's not a zero-sum game. And it's not a game with the clock that ticks down. And it's not a game in which I think we ought to be tracking the score.
Okay.
Think of it as an ongoing dialogue. You know, sometimes the dialogue can be robust. Sometimes it could be muted, depending on what the topic is that we're engaged in as a nation. Also, I'd encourage people to think about this as if it were a race or a game, a never-ending one.
Okay.
Because if we think about a finish line, then we're all racing to the very end as if there is some sense of finality with the project that we're engaged in.
Hmm.
And it's not. So I try to, as a judge, I try to keep in mind the idea that we are constantly engaged in a discussion. It's a very formalized discussion. It's a very formal discussion. It's this discussion that happens in the context of our Constitution and our laws, and then the application of the rule of law, and then that check and balance between each of the branches of government is a constant back and forth,
okay,
a never-ending back and forth. In fact, I hope that we always envision it as a never-ending back and forth. Because
a tennis match that never ends.
Exactly.
Okay.
Maybe we all get exhausted over time, and that's maybe when we slow down a bit.
Sure.
But the beauty of our democracy is that we're all supposed to be in the race together for an enduring time.
Okay. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking to the Honorable Mustafa Kazubai, who is a U.S. District Court Judge for the District of Oregon. Here in Oregon, our Attorney General has been suing, has entered into a lot of lawsuits against the Trump administration, the federal government. Is there tension there?
There are questions of jurisdiction there.
Okay.
And so if you are, if one is going to sue the federal government, it generally falls within the federal courts to review. And
okay.
So I think those lines are pretty clearly understood, drawn and understood between when state court gets involved and when the federal courts are required to be involved. I don't think there's much tension as I understand it, at least among the courts.
Okay.
And I think it's well-established law that has been in place for quite a while that directs where you would sue the federal government.
There's been a lot of times when a single judge like yourself might have a preliminary ruling, and then So how does it get to a single judge, and then it might work its way up to the larger court? How does that sort of happen? Is that just who's available or docket, you know, maintenance, right. if you will?
Okay, yeah, great question. How do any of us get assigned a case?
Exactly.
In most districts, there is a randomized, well, now it's a computer generator.
Okay.
That assigns the case basically on, we call it the wheel. Some people call it a deck.
Okay.
So when a case is filed, the clerk's office and the judges aren't involved in the assignment process. It's the clerk's office looks to see who's up for the next case.
I see. Okay.
And then it gets assigned to that judge.
Okay.
Which I think is an incredibly efficient system, and it allows one judge to see the case from its very inception all the way through to the end. There are other models in state court that have sort of a general assignment process that only assigns cases once they're ready for trial. Now, because of the large volume of state court cases, that is actually wonderfully efficient for the way in which state courts operate. For federal courts, having that intimate relationship and familiarity with the attorneys and the evidence from the very beginning really allows me to deeply understand and appreciate the nuances of the case all the way up to and including the trial, and then even after trial, the motions that I'd have to review.
Do you have confidence in the rule of law, regardless of an activist president or a laissez-faire president, that it can withstand either?
So I think I can answer the question even by separating the first part of the question with the second.
Okay.
Am I optimistic and am I hopeful? Yes, unequivocally. Our system is set up to be redundant. Our system is set up to be actually somewhat inefficient in a beautiful way. Because of its inefficiency, I think it's capable of an immense amount of resilience. And because it's resilient, even when there are stresses placed on the different parts of government and certainly aspects of society and daily living, at the end of the day, I am confident that as long as we all continue to honor and respect our Bill of Rights, the protections that are provided in our Constitution, that we will continue to grow from whatever it is that we're experiencing now and whatever we've experienced in the past.
He's the Honorable Mustafa Kazubai, U.S. District Court Judge for the District of Oregon. Your Honor, always appreciate talking to you. Thank you so much.
It's my honor, Michael. Thank you so much.
Let's now check in regarding the Eugene Public Library from its director, Angela Ocana, the Eugene Library's Library Services Director. It's always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me back. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, let's start with a simple one. How are things going at the library?
I think they're going great.
Okay.
I'm very excited about the things that we're doing. I just started a coffee and conversations program where people can drop in, ask questions. And the feedback has been, we love what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Keep doing more of it. Could you maybe do more bingo? Was the big feedback.
Is it? Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I was like, sure, we'll do bingo.
We'll do bingo. Well, okay. And obviously, how you're doing is also in the shadow of the budget and stuff. Talk about that. How are things going with regard to, I know there's been budget cuts in this. Talk about how you've been able to withstand a real challenge like that.
You know, I think it's owed to the fact that we have such creative staff members who have thought about how to work more efficiently with less. And how do we still continue to have community impact without people noticing that we're short?
Okay.
That's also due in part to a great friends and foundation group who advocate for the library, help fundraise for the library. But we've really looked at what we have and what we can have available and made smart decisions and trimmed around the edges where we could to really increase our impact, but it's not that it's not a shadow, you know.
Okay.
Budgets in Oregon are really wonky the way our tax structures are. We're in a biennium budget, so sometimes that gives you a sense of security, but as we start building that budget for the next fiscal year, you don't know what property taxes and money's going to be generated from the city.
Yeah. Maybe talk a little bit more about some of those creative ways you're able to fulfill services.
Yeah, we've thought about how we bring in and host programs differently. So that could be bringing somebody in where we don't have to have as much touch on the program. That might mean that we're streamlining services to be more digital and getting rid of some of our paper-based services. It's kind of like when you decide to save money in your home budget, you look around and you think to yourself, do I need the 10 subscriptions to Paramount Plus and Netflix? Or do you say, hey, I think we're fine with 7. And part of that's also like looking at how we structure our desks and when are we looking and analyzing traffic patterns and saying, like, we know right after story time, the most amount of kids are hitting the floor and they're gonna have so many questions. But at 7 p.m., you know, families have kind of decided to leave. We've got a few parents, maybe a teacher in. And so we're analyzing desk patterns to put people where the most amount of the public comes in and then scaling back at other times.
Okay. I'm wondering, even if you don't have data, I just wonder if there's some anecdotal sort of evidence you've seen. The economy is a challenge. And like you said, people are hyper-analyzing their budgets, including streaming services and stuff. So I'm wondering, are you seeing a benefit perhaps from people looking for entertainment, for information? Yours is a free service. Is that kind of, are you seeing people maybe look at the library perhaps differently? Maybe it's a different audience that you didn't have before.
Yeah, in fact, this talks to kind of the marketing I want to do in the next year about really reminding folks when you're looking around at, say, streaming services. My partner and I just had this conversation because Spotify increased the amount of money, right, that they have. And sure. I said, why are we paying for this? I have access to tons of CDs. We both have library cards. Mm-hmm. Our music selector, she's amazing. She has a diversified collection of CDs. And just over the holidays, I was talking to our sister who's in her early 20s, and she was talking about how her and her girlfriend have reverted back to physical media. So they're collecting DVDs and music CDs, and we've seen the rise of vinyl all across this landscape. So I feel like, how can we remind people that when you're looking at your own budget, it's not a time to not support the library, because in fact, we have tons of things that you can use for free. Everything from, again, cake pans to bake things to music CDs to DVDs. When you can't find that movie on streaming, I bet you the library has it. And blow off the dust off your DVD player and pop in some CDs. When I was a little kid, my grandma had VHS tapes. We had the whole Disney collection. And we didn't need to subscribe to Disney Plus. We just popped in the cassette tape and off we went.
There you go. Let me remind the audience who we're talking to. It's Angela Ocana. She is the Library Services Director at the Eugene Public Library. Well, and there's an opportunity for money, resources to come to the library. Let's talk about the levy and explain to folks what that is and what it could do.
Yeah, I never thought being the library director, you'd get to talk so much around different budgetary streams and how much the community is like, I don't care. What are you talking about? The library here in Eugene is supported by three funding mechanisms. The first is the largest, which is from the city's general fund.
Okay.
That's property taxes, lots of different pieces all come together to make the general fund. Then you have the second arm, which is donations through our friends and foundation. So when you go buy that book at the book sale, you're supporting the library. When you adopt a shelf plaque in the library, you're supporting us through programs and books and things like that. And then the third, which I think is harder to understand, is a local levy option. And that's a piece where people say, we get to choose as voters how we would like to spend this optional money. And for almost 20 years, 25 years, the city of Eugene, the people who live in this community have said, we'd love to support more at our library. And so our levy supports almost a fourth of services for the Eugene Public Library. And that's included things like hours, programs, collections. When the new library was built, I say new, 25 years ago when the downtown library was built, it helped fund operations to get this big, beautiful building going and moving it out of the smaller area. So continually the citizens of Eugene have said, we love this, we want to support this. And it allows them to have a library that they want and gives them a little bit more.
Okay. What are some of the biggest needs that this levy could help fulfill for the library?
Well, I'm really excited. Council's looking to pass a resolution, so it's not set in stone 100%, okay. but it is very close.
Okay.
This new levy option, so the levy hasn't changed in 10 years. We're still working off of a 2015 levy that was just trying to bring back services from the recession. And in 2020, we actually took a reduction in our levy because it was weird. I don't know if you know, 2020 was weird.
Yes, it was.
So council actually reduced the rate. And so for kind of the last 10 years, we've been operating off of this 2015 mindset. And this was a fresh chance to look at actually what does our community need if we're going to restructure this levy? And we looked at things like the rise of artificial intelligence and how do we help folks understand what does AI mean? Is it coming for your jobs or your livelihood? Is your data safe? And there were so many questions we were hearing from the public. So that was a direction we wanted to move in. And then the other part is we know how vitally important it is for kids in our community to have access to literature and reading, and especially at a young age. And looking around and seeing potential reductions to the school systems, really wanting to be a better partner. And so we're looking to expand early literacy and reading materials for kids 0 to 5. That means sending people out to preschools and daycares and getting kids where they're at. Because as a parent, you can't always make it to the library, but what if we could help and get to your kid and help them get that? And that tacks onto the program we have with student cards for 4J and participating charter schools and Bethel. And so we really want to amp up services to youth. And then the final one that council was very interested in, which is where we're going as a library, is I want to get you access and materials in your neighborhood. And so part of that is this program where we open up 24-hour library kiosks where you can hold materials, you can pick up materials. They're kind of based off that old Redbox system. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Huh. So you can scan your card and find the latest, hottest Wimpy Kid book and check it out with your family, whether that's at a park or at a grocery store. And so we're talking about placing those in Churchill. And so I think the new levy is really this opportunity to look at cost effectiveness and how do we actually deliver the services that people are asking for, that the needs we see in our community.
Great. She is Angela Ocana. She is the Library Services Director for Eugene Library. Angela, always great to talk to you. Thanks for coming in.
Michael, thank you so much. Have a great day.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at kocc.org. Monday on the show, we talk to a U of O professor who's an expert on the causes and potential solutions to our crisis of homelessness. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.